Cultivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Bienvenidos a su programación de Espejos de Aztlán. Welcome to Espejos de Aztlán. I'm your host tonight, and my name is George Luna Peña. Really excited about tonight. I'll be sharing an interview that I did with Alberto Ledesma. Alberto is an educator, an activist, former undocumented student, a writer, and creator of the comic and cartoon called Diary of a Dreamer. So we'll be back in just a minute with that interview.
Pinté el pelo güero y como no hablaba inglés, que me retachan de nuevo. La migra a mí me agarró 300 veces, digamos, pero jamás me domó. A mí me hizo los mandados, los golpes que a mí me dio, se los cobré a sus paisanos.
Welcome to Espejos de Aztlán, Alberto.
It's a placer, you know, to be here too. Very excited. Thank you again for inviting me.
Sure. And Alberto, I guess to add some context to the conversation, can we start off with maybe you sharing a bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I'm a California boy mostly. My parents brought my family and I to the U.S. when I was about, 7 years old. We grew up in East Oakland, up in Northern California. I tend to reflect a lot about, what it means to grow up in East Oakland as a Latino kid, when we first arrived there, the population was predominantly African American in our community. And now, 40 years later, it's mostly Latino. So there's been a lot of changes, and we witnessed those changes. In that time, my family came undocumented, so there's also been changes in terms of our relationship to American society, because, we became citizens after a number of years. Just seeing, how things have changed, has been one thing that has influenced my life a lot. My parents still live in East Oakland. And even though, now as a professional, I, have a better life, and live in the suburbs, my concern for what it meant to live in the ghetto, as an undocumented immigrant kid, that's still, very much at the heart of what I do, the work that I do, and what I fight for.
And you kind of spoke about this a little bit in your answer there, but the Bay Area and Oakland specifically, East Oakland, has such a sort of rich history of activism. I'm assuming that sort of had a major impact on you as well.
Oh, absolutely. I live in the heart of East Oakland, close to the Sunshine, or where I grew up, the Sunshine Biscuits factory, mm-hmm. Now it's been closed for, I think more than a decade. But that area is also the area where the Black Panthers kind of did most of their work. And so for me, this little kid in elementary school, I remember, the summers, going to summer school and seeing that most of my friends, were also going to get, lunches, and not knowing what that, kind of being curious about it, because, it seemed like it was this new program and that, there was something radical about it, because the teachers in our summer school didn't know much about it. They supported it, but they didn't know about it. And it wasn't until, you know, almost towards the end of that first summer school that I did that I found out that, you know, it was sponsored by the Black Panthers. And, you know, I was both fascinated and at the same time, like, wow, should I be doing this? And I realized, you know, there were, you know, the class, we shared a class experience, you know, there, you know, living in East Oakland the way that we did.
Right.
It was a cultural difference, you know, that was the big issue at that time. But for me, you know, they were doing something powerful and important. And so right away I became curious, like, you know, well, where's the Mexican American part of this? You know, where do we fit in? You know, what's happening here, you know? So as a little kid, you know, this is like 8, 9 years old, you know, already having these questions.
And so I guess before we bring it back to present day, I want to stick around maybe the 80s for just a little bit longer. But I've read in some places you've written that when IRCA, the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, passed, you went from being a B student to an A student and things like
that.
Can you maybe talk a little bit more about that?
You know, there's this talk now about, you know, DREAM Act students, you know, and I think the model minority myth is very much tied, you know, to what being a DREAM Act student is about, you know, this idea that there's all these students who, you know, who have this immense potential and even as undocumented students are able to super achieve. And I did see that. I saw that not just with me, but with my siblings, you know, where there's a professor, Aurora Chang, who writes about this, you know, how there's some undocumented immigrant students who, you know, in order to show the world that they are more than just, you know, undocumented, they overachieve. And so they are, you know, they accumulate award after award, you know, to demonstrate that. And for me, you know, I didn't know the theory behind it before, you know, I you know, let's say in my early 20s, you know, I really wasn't as aware, but going through Amnesty, and I was at Berkeley when IRCA came into, you know, possibility that it was clear that it was going to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen. What I knew at that time was that I was always afraid. I always thought that, you know, tomorrow or the next day I was going to get caught and deported. And I see that fear in a lot of students that I counsel now who are undocumented students here at Berkeley. I recognize it right away, you know, this insecurity that, you know, they carry with them all the time because I experienced it myself, you know. And, I realized, you know, in at Berkeley, all of a sudden, you know, I was asking different kinds of questions in class. And I was thinking about the next semester in class, and I was thinking about the next project. I was thinking about graduate, and I was thinking things that I hadn't thought about before because I wasn't worried about, you know, getting deported. And I, you know, I wasn't unique. You know, I had a lot of friends at Berkeley who eventually I discovered had gone through the same process, and I know that they, too, had this boost of confidence, you know, from, you know, this monkey being taken off their back.
And you brought up the term, you brought up Aurora Chang's term, hyper-documented, that you have a great sort of little sketch that I think shows that really well. And we'll talk a little bit more about Diary of a Dreamer and some of your other work in a minute, but I'm curious how sort of comics and things like that influenced you as a child or as you were growing up and things like that.
Well, you know, I think one of the things about growing up, you know, in the ghetto, that, you know, my family, my dad didn't bring us to an already established Latino community here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant that learning English, you know, we had to do it on ourselves, you know, or maybe, you know, with a teacher. And in Woodland Elementary, where I went to, there was only, like, you know, maybe one or two teachers who spoke Spanish. So, you know, most of the time, you know, I felt like, you know, the teacher, you know, actually the teacher in Charlie Brown was my teacher, all my teachers, right? You know, were blah, 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 blah. I didn't know what they were saying. I found that one of the easiest way to learn English was by reading comic books. That, you know, because there is, you know, there are action sequences.
Right.
And artists draw, you know, they tell half the story with the action. And so I started, you know, being able to decode English, you know, with by you know, reading Spider-Man and noticing, you know, when it was that, you know, let's say go or, you know, punch or whatever, you know, all these different words, you know, you saw what they meant. And so quickly I accumulated a pretty large collection of comic books because they were basically my dictionaries. Hmm. Another way I think that it made an impact was that in elementary school, you know, I didn't have language to communicate with my peers, but I could draw, I could sketch. I could sketch these hero figures, and it was a way of establishing a commonality with them, and they liked that, you know, because, you know, I could do things that they couldn't do. And, particularly in all-African-American school, it gave you a degree of, you know, security because, you know, now you weren't just a cultural foreigner. You know, there was something that you could do that was valued. And so that also was another reason why it became important.
And, of course, now you've chosen sort of cartooning and drawing as your mode or method of activism, at least one of your methods of activism. Could you maybe talk a little bit about how you came to make that decision to express your thoughts and your activism through your drawings?
Sure. I mean, well, this, you know, kind of goes back, I would say, you know, maybe a decade and a half or so. I went to graduate school with the express interest of writing about what it meant to be undocumented. In fact, what I wanted to do early on was actually be a novelist and write about this. But once I was in the program, I realized that the project was much bigger than a novel or much bigger than just getting this master's. And so I wanted to get the PhD. And when I finished it, my goal was to write, you know, articles and to try to, you know, provoke a dialogue exactly around this issue. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that 10 years ago, even though, you know, I was kind of writing these articles and, you know, going to conferences, that the interest on undocumented immigration and the agency of undocumented immigrants, particularly around cultural politics, that it was there for a few people. But not, it wasn't, you know, central. It wasn't something that, in fact, you know, I remember publishing a couple of chapters and going and having debates with people in the audience about whether or not, you know, immigrant issues should be part of a Chicano text. You know, so there's still, you know, this division. And so I kept writing. And then more recently I was teaching a class and I was going to, you know, talk about the ascendant or this developing immigrant student movement, but during the summer we were running out of time. I didn't want to assign them more reading, so I thought, you know, really quickly, well, one way that I can maybe bring up the issues, I'm going to do this quick cartoon that will encompass in it the issue, and, you know, a picture paints 1,000 words, so hopefully they'll be able to consume it real quickly, and then we can engage the conversation.
Right.
And I did not suspect it was going to have the kind of impact that it did. You know, next thing you know, on Facebook, you know, I shared the image, and, you know, there's all kinds of people who are writing back saying, hey, you know, that's really interesting. That's, you know, it resonates with my experience. They asked me other questions. And I just started doing cartoons, you know, like a madman. You know, I felt that I had found the way to establish this dialogue that I originally wanted to establish that I had not been as successful, you know, with the other tools that I had. And so I've been doing that ever since. I do what I call these visual essays or these visual vignettes where, kind of like a political cartoon, I try to create situations that, you know, get you into undocumented immigrant student epistemology and what it feels like to live in that condition. But I do it through this dramatic situations in cartoon.
So, Alberto, let me just take 1 minute to remind folks that they are listening to Espejos de Aztlán here on KUNM 89.9 FM, Albuquerque, Nuevo México. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
Ice, water frozen solid. ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. ICE, El Hielo.
Iba pasando el trapo sobre la mesa y está cuidando que todo brille como una perla. Cuando llegue la patrona, que no se vuelva a quejar, no sea cosa que la acuse de ilegal. José atiende los jardines, parecen de Disneyland. Maneja una troca vieja sin la licencia. No importa si fue taxista allá en su tierra natal. Eso no cuenta para el tío Sam. El hielo anda suelto por esas calles. Nunca se sabe cuándo nos va a tocar.
And so, Alberto, you've been touching upon this with all of your answers, I think, but I'll just ask you sort of straightforwardly, what does it mean to you to do activism around being undocumented?
Well, I mean, for me, I have one professor, Ron Takaki, when I was in graduate school, mm-hmm. and he was really, really influential in my life. And he was a historian, right? And his interest was always in kind of doing this bottom-up history to tell the story of the U.S. And how the U.S., you know, had come to be, both in order to celebrate, you know, this diverse community that we have, but also to acknowledge, you know, why we still live in a segmented society and what responsibilities are implicit, the repercussion of that knowledge. You know, what does it mean for us in terms of our own responsibility? And one thing that he said, you know, was that there's only so many of us, you know, there's only a few of us that have the position, the training, the perspective to relay certain stories to certain audiences. That when you have those positions, it's your responsibility to do that. And if you don't do it, it's a waste. You know, you can't, you know, that is somebody else could have, you know, and you, if you don't. And that always, you know, was in my mind, you know, that always was bouncing in my head. And so when I saw the immigrant student movement beginning to awaken, I wanted to do my part too. And I just couldn't see myself, you know, not contributing some way. And I think, doing the cartoons, for me, it was a natural, even though I had been trying, you know, to do a lot of stuff, you know, with the essays and with the stories that I was writing, mm-hmm. you know, producing it through those modes is much slower. And, you know, and you have less of an immediate reward. And so that's what happened. You know, I just feel that I bear a sense of responsibility to this emerging, you know, new movement. You know, that there's a perspective that I have that I want to share because I think they, you know, some of the young people can benefit from it. But also it's my thanks to them and my thanks also to Ron Takagi mm-hmm. for teaching me what he taught me, even though he's, you know, no longer with us. You know, I think he was right on in terms of reminding us that, you know, some of us, particularly when we come from previously marginalized communities, you know, that there's a responsibility that we can choose to exercise if we want to.
Let's talk a little bit more about Diary of a Dreamer.
Sure.
For folks that might not be familiar with it, can you maybe just describe it real quick? And is it literally a diary? Is it, you know, and I mean, I've seen you post some photos or I've seen you post some sketches and then you will, in the caption, you'll say this is page 9 of Diary of a Dreamer.
Yeah, so the project began literally as this moleskin diary that I was taking to lunch every day. I'm also a creative writer, and so for many years I've been used to, you know, every lunchtime I carry my journal with me in order to write, even if it is a sentence or two sentences or a paragraph on a good day, what have you, you know, just to keep the work, you know, moving forward. And I had gotten this new journal that was blank, you know, a blank Moleskine journal. And I remember the first time I got it, it's like, you know, well, you know, I'm going to write, but, you know, this one, I have no lines to guide me. So I think I'm just going to go ahead and draw something also. Mm. You know, I started doing cartoons, and I just finished going through this wonderful, wonderful program that gave me a lot of ideas for putting together a manuscript, a proper manuscript. I think I have the manuscript already, but I want to do it. I want to do something that is a little bit more coherent in terms of conveying a narrative.
Okay, and that's definitely, it's a plan in the works, and that's what it's going
to
turn into.
My goal is by December to have that thing done. Yeah.
Great. Can you maybe talk about maybe one or two cartoons that you've put together that have gotten a lot of response from folks and things like that, or maybe even just some of your favorites?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have this one that I did, you know, about a few months ago, actually, that I did of this man, this bracero, on the field, kind of carrying this basket of produce. And I think I did it on the metaphysics of being undocumented. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it was another lunchtime sketch. You know, I did it really quickly. But, you know, it was raw. I mean, when I did it, I wanted, you know, it was very diary-like, you know, where you write things that, you know, are vulnerable and you don't know if you should even be, you know, doing this. And I wrote, just because you value my arms and my back, it does not mean that I lack a mind with which to reflect on my condition. The truth is that I could write tomes about the ways that exploitation sharpens a worker's ability to see how society really works. But the kind of literacy I possess is not one that you value. My voice is not one you can hear. Someday it will be my children who will translate my experience in a fashion you will find hard to ignore. And I found, you know, I got dozens of responses, you know, within a matter of a day. I did one recently, I think one that was posted in a number of places where, you know, I imagine this goes back to my comic book writing days, you know, or reading days, where Lex Luthor is dressed like a Border Patrol guard and he is arresting Superman, right? And, you know, the caption is, what if Lex Luthor joined the Border Patrol? You know, then I guess even the more hyper-documented of all undocumented immigrants on Earth, Superman, would have to worry. You know? So a lot of, you know, there's also a lot of philosophical stuff, you know, that I, you know, some stuff that, you know, there's some things that I do that, you know, are almost too conceptual. You know, people don't really get it. Mm-hmm. There's one cartoon that I did of Freddy Krueger, you know, where he's mowing the lawn. And, you know, there's two young men kind of watching him do it. And the caption is like, you know, hey, why is Freddie working so hard on this garden this morning? And another man saying, well, because he just found out that only immigrants who work really hard and stay out of trouble will qualify for the Dream Act. You know, people, you know, that one, it took a while for people to get it.
Right.
You know, and so eventually they're right back and go, yeah, oh, I get it now. You know? So it's, I'm also learning how to be humorous, you know, because that's something also I didn't realize it was that much of a science.
There was one that I thought was interesting. It's sort of, I think it's you and you're just hanging out with Ralph Ellison.
Oh, right, yeah.
And,
well, you know, Invisible Man for me was like one of the main books that really shaped my life. Because I think what Invisible Man did is I had never read, I mean, maybe in reading Richard Wright also, but Invisible Man, I think, really takes anger, you know, kind of the anger that comes from that people who've been oppressed feel, and really works through it in order to investigate and to deconstruct it. And for me, that was something that I needed to do, because I think the same way as the protagonist in Invisible Man, that what happens, I think, with a lot of undocumented immigrant kids is that when you are going through the experience, you're numb. It's hard to look at the mirror and see anything other than just the fact that you're undocumented. And so it takes a long time for you really to get to know even yourself at a deep level. And so when I read this, when I read this book, and I saw how, you know, the character needed to deconstruct himself to get to know what he really believed in and how he viewed society, well, you know, that just, you know, it was one of those books that, you know, at the end you go, wow, you know, you can't help but, you know, just admire it. And so I, you know, had this fantasy of, you know, one day, you know, just sitting there with Ralph Ellis and kind of sharing notes. And, you know, that's the other thing that cartoons do. You know, I think it's hard in an essay or in a short story to shift narrative perspectives that quickly. But comics allows you to both, you know, kind of do the first person and to perform the first person and be very subjective, but then also to have this third person narrator, you know, kind of reflecting on things. And I think that's brilliant. You know, I mean, I think that that's, I'm surprised that more research projects are not done using, you know, kind of this kind of combination of graphics and narrative.
Right. And so, Alberto, we're talking a lot about some of the different cartoons that you've drawn and stuff like that. If folks that might be listening right now are interested in maybe seeing some of those, is there a place online where they can check those out?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the easiest thing to do would be to go to culturestrike.net. If you go there, they do have a couple of, you know, links to my work. One is called Cartooning for a Cause. And if you go there, the nice thing about it, at the bottom of the page, there's a link to my Facebook album that has, you know, 100 or so drawings. And, you know, people can check it out, and, you know, that'll be cool.
Great. And, Alberto, unfortunately, we are running a little low on time, but before we get out of here, is there anything else that you would like to add?
You know, I just want to encourage, you know, kids and, you know, just to use all your skills. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I used to do cartoons everywhere and all the time. And I think, you know, when I came into college, in particular in graduate school, I thought that, you know, I was no longer a kid and therefore, you know, I'm not going to do childish things, right? And so I gave it up. And, you know, I regret doing that because, you know, I'm just kind of getting back to the level of, you know, kind of fun and talent that I used to have when I was a little kid, you know, doing cartoons. But I think, you know, it's a wonderful tool. And who says you have to change the world only one way? I think now, especially with, you know, all this technological innovation that we have, there are many ways to change the world. So, yeah, don't neglect that.
Great. Well, thank you again, Alberto, for joining us today. You know, I've enjoyed reading through some of your cartoons and things like that. I'm definitely looking forward to maybe when it all comes out together, bind it in a book.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that myself. Yeah. Thank you so much for you know, inviting me into the show.
My name is George Luna Peña, and this has been your Programación of Espejos de Aztlán.